Chapter 7. After the feature.
And action!
Something else was beginning to take my attention. Music. You see, by the time I was 14 or 15, my friends were no longer interested in being in my films. They were out drinking and, you know, taking drugs. Yes, seriously, that does happen every day in the real world, parents. In fact, by 14, most of my mates were going to clubs. Very shit ones that let kids in on the grounds that, oh, he looked 18 to me, Gov. So the films, regardless of my drive and passion, were very difficult, often impossible to complete. I'd actually written another two features, so I was still really excited by film, but casting was a massive problem for me. I was still using the Sandstorm name. In fact, my good friend Don Gill, who was the main star in my feature film, had created a new version of the Sandstorm logo. When I was 7 or 8, the logo was a rectangle with a squiggle through it, supposed to be a simple version of a window looking out onto a sand dune. I told Don about this when we began filming the feature, and he just turned up one day at school with this amazing version of the logo. Actually, as I described, but looking much more professional now. Don, I was soon to discover, loved computers, and he was an Apple Mac child. His dad worked at a big London newspaper, and he had Photoshop. Oh, how this computer changed my world. I was soon to follow him, but with my Windows 95 machine. And between the two of us, there seemed to be nothing we couldn't achieve. But the achievement was no longer video, because by now, I'd made over 100 short films, and I'd got nothing for it. Well, not that I could see as a 15-year-old, anyway. I was starting to get good paid work from video, regularly filming or editing for people. Sometimes I earned £150 in a day for doing this, which for a 15-year-old is really good. But now that was a job. I wanted to focus on something else. And what was that? Well, it was pretty obvious. It was Don's love, and mine to a point, music. He was always into jungle. I was a massive, you know, Chemical Brothers Prodigy fan. So we liked electronic music, and we started to take it seriously. He started writing jungle, I started writing big beats. We went our separate ways, but at this age, it seemed everybody at school was getting into music. This is, of course, well before every child had a laptop, you know, well before Cubase and Fruity Loops were mainstream products, so writing electronic music was pretty much impossible without a lot of money and kit. I was earning money, so I bought and acquired kit, but I had no way of, you know, sequencing or synchronizing the stuff. So I created an approach where I'd record each sound into my video editing system, which I'd saved up to buy, and I'd then edit the sounds like a video together, and it would create what I was calling music. I called it Rage, and it stood for Raw Analog Groove Element, because I was using elements of analog sound and cutting them together to create grooves. I loved doing it because, to me, it was going to make me famous. It was going to get me the recognition that film seemed to have failed to bring. It didn't. In fact, when I finally finished my first album, I realised it was, you know, complete rubbish. A few people loved it, and I sold loads of them locally, but I suspect the people who were into it were simply into it because they knew me and I was probably the only person they knew who could write big beats. Most people, including my girlfriend, thought it was absolute shit. If my girlfriend didn't like it, the likelihood was it probably was shit. I have to be honest, it was a bit of a risk for me. I wanted to do music because I loved dancing, but I had no musical skills. My mum was a pianist, my dad was a viola player, but I didn't have any formal training. They tried to make me go to piano lessons, but I hated anything where I was, you know, told what to do, really. So the music I was creating was really more of a nod to video editing talent rather than actual musical flair. I quickly turned my attention to rock music because bands were coming up everywhere. Oasis was around at the time and every second person seemed to be walking around with the stupid hair, shades, constantly looking upward rather than where they were actually going. At first, people asked me to play keys because of the electronic keyboard background, but I actually struggled to play the keyboard properly. I was a dreadful pianist. So I started listening to my friends' bands and tried to drum along with a few electronic trigger pads I had. I then got a real drum kit and, much to my neighbour's utter dismay, I picked it up pretty quickly. A month later, I was in the biggest band at school and we were doing some really cool gigs. That kept me pretty busy for the next 6 to 8 months. We played loads of gigs. We were popular. Hell, my girlfriend even liked the music we played. It all seemed so promising. Song after song was written, gig after gig seemed to sell out. Rehearsals were tight and the band got along. Well, until reality hit, that was. We played 2 gigs in 2 nights. One night everybody was there. We had a crowd of, say, 350 people. And the venue was electric. Everyone we knew was there. From memory, even my parents were in the crowd. One of the numbers was called Wardy's Mum and Dad, which was a bit of a nod to the big beat stuff I was into, and that my parents were also a bit electrocentric. That had the crowd absolutely dancing their socks off. An amazing feeling, and we packed the kit away and loaded it back into my dad's old Montego estate car, looking forward to the next evening. My brother, the one who used to get horrendously beaten up as 7 different bad guys all those years ago, helped out. he'd get my different kit for different songs and help me fix my hi-hats, which cost about £5, every time they broke halfway through a song. It seemed like the real deal. I think we recorded it onto a DAT tape, ready for the CDs to be made up and sold. We counted out our earnings from the night, over £100 from memory, which for us was, you know, pretty good. We all went to bed thinking we'd truly made it. The second night, set up, empty venue. First band played, still empty venue. The 350 people from last night will appear at any moment. 5 people turned up. Oh dear. We cut the set short, and after a sudden reality check, we never actually played again. I would say it was from the disappointment, but a lot changed at that point. We were 16, school was coming to an end, exams were, from memory, looming, and we were all about to start our next chapter in life. From there on in, it was time to get serious. I'd spent my last 7 or 8 years at school making films. My schools had been fantastic in encouraging me to. They loved having a pupil that wanted to do something so much. A couple of my teachers even critiqued my productions. But now it was time for exams, and I knew nothing. I hadn't done any preparation, and I was about to fail my exams miserably. Now, this goes back to my first chapter. I was always taught at school that if you didn't have good exam results, you would live your life in a gutter somewhere. They don't actually tell you about all the huge entrepreneurial geniuses who've made massive successes themselves but completely flunked school. Why don't they tell you that? Well, I guess because if they're telling you to be an entrepreneur, well, you're not an entrepreneur. The kids at our school were lucky if they could even get a job. Most of them came from extremely underprivileged families, and just turning up to school was a massive issue for them. So if they failed their exams, it was another hurdle to jump when they applied for another, you know, call centre job. I didn't realise this at the time, and I wasn't actually aware I was an entrepreneur. I felt, and I genuinely believed, that I was just, you know, another has-been who, you know, should I fail my exams, would be unable to find work. It's very much like the bully rule. If someone's a bully to you at school, just stand tall in the knowledge that if you just get on and work hard, you'll, you know, beat them in the long term, because having a specialist job, more job security, better prospects, that's going to help you to get where you need to be in life. A bully is just someone with an insecurity. You know, what are they going to do in a job interview? Threaten their way to a better career? In life, the more you put in, the more you get out. I seem to be contradicting myself. What I'm trying to say is, school doesn't really matter that much. Whether that is your results or the kids who bully you and bring you down, the real journey starts once school actually finishes. A bully is after attention. Attention is not going to make you a success. Your career will, as I discovered. Regardless, I did work hard at my exams. I did quite well. Nothing to write in a book. I really can't knock my school life. I'd done little to no work for 7 years, and I still got a few decent grades. Grades, by the way, that I've never shown to an employer. That is how useful exams are. I just wrote, made a feature film at 13 on my CV, and then I'd explain how. That always got me work. It's an extremely important message. Someone who does something unexpected will stand out on a CV and stands a much higher chance of getting a much more adventurous job. When I suddenly finished school, I hit a massive depression. I'd just split up with my girlfriend. Literally for one reason, that I needed the space to do my exams. They were over. I needed company. All my schoolmates were doing the drugs still. I refused to do drugs. Then they were planning to go back to school for sixth form. I certainly refused to do that. Why spend more time at school when I was already getting work and wanted to get more? That summer, my dad said to me, "Don't worry about sixth form, Tom. You've done so well with your films. You'll be fine." That was a major turning point for me. Because all through my filmmaking years, my dad had sort of laughed at me and been incredibly discouraging. He then went on to tell me that he'd watched my feature and he loved it, and that the reason he decided to was because his friends had seen my films and loved them. So all these years, I thought he hated me, my films, the life I led. Turned out he loved all of it. He even liked the bands I'd been in. Anyway, my dad's thoughts on sixth form stuck with me. I decided I was definitely not going back to school. Did I mention my dad and I had been drinking in a pub when he said this? We used to go for a pint together quite a lot. It was an amazing, you know, father-son time, something we'd never had before the pub. There's a different atmosphere when you're sat in a pub and the rest of the world can be forgotten for a while. So while he seemed keen to encourage me onward to my own destiny, once he was at home, and in retrospect sober, he was not at all pleased that I wasn't staying at school. Amazing how this kind of thing happens to people when they sober up, huh? "But what about university? No one's going to give you a job without a uni qualification." He had changed his tact. Luckily, I knew better than my dad on this one, only because I'd been in the film industry now for years and realised no one had a qualification. Everyone had fallen into their role and stuck at it, very much like a builder. I knew that university wasn't going to teach me anything I didn't already know. Dad didn't disagree, but he wasn't a happy bunny about it. So I went out into the real world with no real support. I did still have a roof over my head, though my dad now wanted rent, you know, every cloud and all that. I went out into the real world and the job started well. Then they stopped. I realised that when I was at school, I was doing a job every 1, every 2 months maybe, for 150 quid at the most. Although I was now certainly earning a lot more than that, I didn't have enough industry contacts to get regular work. What do I do now? My mum told me I had to get a full-time job. Keeping in mind, by the way, I'd only been out of school for 4 months in total. She was panicking maybe a little bit. Because they wanted the rent and I was moping about in the house getting in the way. In my mind, I was editing showreels and being productive. In her mind, being productive was not being in the house. I think she was right, though. I should have been out there, you know, knocking on doors to get more work, but I didn't know that. For a 16-year-old with few contacts, I wasn't sure who or how I would speak to people in order to get work as a director, as a cameraman, or an editor. I seemed to jump between all three roles on each job I got. So the only solution that would appease my mum was to get a part-time job, and only a few jobs really existed in my town. The easiest for someone with no qualifications was telesales. So telesales it was. I won't go into the details, but most of the people running the call centre were ex-call centre staff, and staff in call centres, well, the one I worked in anyway, were actively encouraged not to use their brains at work. Therefore, the bosses were, well, obviously, not the most dynamic people. You can tell I'm trying to be polite. 2 weeks into the job and I got desperate and popped over to a friend. I say a friend, he was a cameraman with a very dynamic, very beautiful wife, who it turned out worked for an agency. Knock, knock at the door, beautiful wife answers. Is Andy in? I ask. Nope, the reply. But after 10 seconds of talking, we realise we've never actually spoken. Whenever I'm at the house, I'm either editing for Andy or, you know, dubbing tapes. When beautiful wife realises I'm not working full time, she offers me a job interview. Out of nowhere. Needless to say, I said yes, and the next day I jumped in her car to the office of the agency she worked for. I did a bit of training, met the boss, an amazingly enthusiastic guy called Mark, and I had a job.